next week, same time, 9 o'clock. Till then, have a great week and take care. Sunday Morning is a tandem production for BBC Radio 3, thanks to my producer, Faith Waddle, and our studio manager in Broadcasting House, Alan Zani.
On BBC iPlayer.
I'm here for one thing, vengeance.
From the writer of Peaky Blinders.
Throw the boy to the wild beasts of this city.
Starring Olivia Colman.
So, Pip, are you in love with her yet?
I told you my intention is not to fall in love.
Love is not always the result of intention.
I will teach you how to be a gentleman.
That is who I am now. That is who I have to be.
Great Expectations.
So it begins.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
It's midday, time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Libby Jackson is the head of space exploration for the UK Space Agency. She has turned a childhood passion for space into a wide-ranging career. She was flight instructor and controller at Europe's Mission Control Centre for the International Space Station. Libby then joined the UK Space Agency in 2014 and led their education programme when the astronaut Tim Peake went into space. She's now one of Britain's leading experts in human spaceflight and last year was awarded an OBE for her work. Libby's musical passions reflect the vast wonder of space, but also her love of choral music and her adventures in Newfoundland as a teenager. Your first piece, I suppose I might have guessed at.
The Planets. One of the first pieces of classical music that I remember listening to. It was really the planets and space as a whole that caught my imagination when I was little. And setting that to music, the imagination of what might be out there, of what these planets might look like and feel like and be like, it's wonderful in music.
Which movement shall we home in on?
Well, I think Jupiter, for one. It's really impossible to pick. But Jupiter is a bringer of jollity. It's right there in the title. So it always makes me smile, this particular movement.
Thank you. Jupiter, bringer of jollity from Gustav Holst's The Planets. Mark Elder conducted the Halle Orchestra. Do you like the way he brings that sense of fun, but also suggests the splendour of space?
It really does. The vastness. When those melodies come in and they just fill the space, and then you have this lyrical bit that takes you into this serenity that as you look out to the stars and you just sort of see there, it's vast and quiet at the same time, and somehow that piece captures that for me.
Libby Jackson, you started writing about space when you were very young, The Travel Guide to Mars.
Yes. I was at primary school, must have been 8 or 9, and we were all asked to create a travel guide for somewhere we wanted to go to. We were supposed to go and pick Australia or Italy, but my interest in space was there. I want to go to Mars. So I drew some pictures and I imagined what a hotel might look like, and I devoured the stories of humans going to the moon, which felt when I was little as ancient history. But here we are now on the cusp of the next chapter of that. It's very exciting.
When and how did it dawn on you that you could actually make space a job, your living?
Well, I started to see that when I was in the middle of my sort of secondary school life. My physics teacher walked in with a yellow piece of paper, waved it around and said, there's this thing called space school. Would anyone like to go? And I think squarely looking at me, and I took the flyer home to my mum, said, this sounds interesting. I'd like to do it, and sorted it out, and off I went. And I spent a week at Brunel University learning about space, but more importantly, learning that here in the UK, we build spacecraft that go into space, that allow us to talk to everybody, but also allow us to go and explore these planets. And it was then that I thought, oh, OK, you don't have to go all the way to America to do this. There are jobs here and there are engineers. And it still took me a few more years to work out that that would be something I could do.
But in fact, you were a teenager when you made your first visit to NASA, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. And whilst I'd seen these spacecraft being built in the UK, what had captured my imagination most completely was astronauts and the history of how humans had gone into space and the engineering challenges and keeping them safe.
Did you want to be an astronaut?
No, not particularly. It was mission control that I found interesting. There's something about putting yourself on top of a very carefully controlled exploding bomb and then living in a very smelly, cramped conditions, which you give me the chance and I would go. But that was not something that captured me particularly.
It was the science really behind it.
It was the majesty and the excitement and beauty and what's out there and that real exploration within us as a species to wonder well, what's round the corner and what's up and over that hill and what happens if we try and do this?
Well, interestingly, that sense of adventure extends into your music, because we got a piece a bit later on by a contemporary composer which does break boundaries. Mm. But first of all, tell me how important music was to you when you were very young. I mean, did you come from a musical family?
There still isn't in my parents. There's not a musical gene amongst them, as far as I can tell. I don't know where it came from. It was a friend of mine who lived down the road, had a piano, and I thought this looked rather lovely. I bugged my parents. I said, please, can I learn to play the piano? This looks amazing. And so my mum said, you can try, but we'll practice down the road for a term or something, because we're not going to buy a piano if this is just a passing fad. And I stuck with it. And I was very lucky. I was bought a beautiful Technics electric piano. My parents thought this was great because you could plug the headphones in and they wouldn't need to listen to me practice, and I would never need tuning. And I still have it 30 something years later, and it's marvellous. And then I give all credit to the Bromley Youth Music Trust. I grew up in southeast London in Bromley. I learned to play recorder, as everybody does, but really enjoyed doing that. And the oboe.
Much more difficult.
Yes.
But singing became important.
Yeah, but all of this, I had access at school to orchestras and to choirs. And without those opportunities, I never would have discovered this. I never would have found that I can sing a little and play a little. And the community and the fun of it, the release.
Well, one of the pieces you've chosen, indeed the next piece, was very much inspired by choral singing.
Yeah. Bromley Youth Music Trust wanted to bring all the school choirs together, and we performed the Requiem at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon, which is a proper concert venue. And again, to have that exposure to performing, I mean, I must have been 12, was just such an amazing eye-opening experience.
Well, you've chosen one of the most dramatic moments in a very dramatic piece. In fact, one's never allowed to forget that Verdi was a great opera composer, although this is a sacred work.
Yeah, it is that sense of drama, noise, and everyone just giving as much as you can to make this massive, massive moment.
The Dies Irae from Verdi's Requiem. We heard the Monteverdi Choir and Orchestra Révolutionnaire et Romantique, conducted by John Elliott Gardner, and we caught just a glimpse of the soprano soloist Luba Ogonosova. Which part were you singing? Not the soprano soloist, obviously.
No, I was busy singing the alto line, which was what then was a real gateway, because I was asked to join the local chamber choir, which I had no right to be in. There were, you know, many, many greater singers there who've gone on since to lead fantastic careers in music.
Finding altos is not always that easy.
Altos and tenors
are in high demand.
I think that was to my benefit. But what an opportunity, discovering music, enjoying music, which was in such contrast, really, to the science I was studying so hard at and I've consequently followed a career in. And I've often said to people, seize every opportunity that comes your way. Singing just makes me smile. Still does.
That thing of seizing an opportunity from what can sometimes be rather sad events, I'm thinking of the divorce of your parents, but it led to your father going to Newfoundland and you finding new lands yourself.
Yeah, my dad worked in the oil industry, which took him first to Norway and then later to Newfoundland. And so I would spend my summers and Easter holidays visiting him and my brothers and stepmum out in St. John's in Newfoundland. And the rich tapestry of folk music that they have on that island is astounding. And if anyone's not come across it, I just encourage you to do so much. It was really probably how I discovered folk music in a way that I hadn't before. It is an island that is really stuck out in the middle of nowhere, that gets battered by all the winds, that's really difficult to get to. They had a lot of fishing and so on way back, and found music brought them all together. And I'm really excited to include this next piece. It's come from a musical now that's set in Newfoundland.
Come From Away.
That is bringing this fabulous place, the music, the warmth of the islanders to more and more people to discover the true story of what happened there back in those dark days of 9/11.
It's an interesting story, isn't it? Because a lot of planes were diverted and therefore a huge number of people found themselves somewhere they were completely unused to, but they were shown great kindness, weren't they, by the local inhabitants?
Yeah, 30-odd planes landed there, 7,000 people. No one was expecting this. The island came together. No one knew how long they were staying for. Everybody at that time was sort of scared, confused. It was this massive thing that had happened and changed how we looked at the way the world is. And I first heard this piece of music on the radio. I didn't know that this musical existed. And I was just taken back there to this beautiful place with wonderful people, caring, considerate, doors wide open. And I think the musical brings that to life so wonderfully that they just share and care for people, because when you're stuck in an island in the middle of nowhere, if someone's knocking on your door, you know they need some help.
It's called Screech In.
Yeah, I wanted to pick this piece because it is the tradition that is still there today. I have a marvellous photo of my dad going through this. But it's the tradition to become a Newfoundlander. You have to kiss the locally caught cod. You have to take a shot of Screech, which is some terrible rum.
And powerful rum.
Yes, and wear the sou'wester hat. And if you do that, then you'll become a Newfoundlander.
It's performed here by a group who specialise in folk music of that area.
Yeah, there are all sorts of different folk bands from the island. Another one that I knew when I was over there as a teenager was the Irish Descendants, who I think are still going today. It tells you that the music has its roots in Irish folk music as well. And the local groups have produced this album of covers. And this piece is set in the bar. It's when everyone's been stuck on this island and they've all got the same clothes they've had on for the last 3 days. The band come on stage and there's an ugly stick, which is the Newfoundland percussion, and the drum and the fiddle.
Now there's a solemn old tradition for admission or addition to transition from a come from away
to be a Newfoundlander.
The only way at any rate is to pass away and pray to fate and wait to reincarnate
as a Newfoundlander.
Oh, hey, hey, come on inside. Nothing venture, nothing try.
Only a couple of people cry. You'll be a Newfoundlander.
Hey, hey, sit down right here. You'll feel better in a year.
Try to ignore your doubts and fears, and you'll be a Newfoundlander.
Now the first part is the easiest. We'll soon get to the queasiest. I'll need you to repeat this mess.
You become a Newfoundlander.
We speak a different language, son. We add some S's and some rum. You'll have to try a good old cotton.
You become a Newfoundlander.
Oh, hey, hey, do your
mess. Nothing scary, nothing yet.
You'll have to change the way you're dressed, and you'll be a Newfoundlander.
Hey, hey, sing along. Nothing venture, just prolong.
There's 30 verses in this song, and you'll be a Newfoundlander.
You gotta walk the plank and there'll be blood or there'll be bliss. It's the same to be a Newfoundlander, every person's wish. So don't be dumb, just take the plunge, go on and kiss the fish.
One, two, three, four.
Oh, hey, hey, come on tonight, take a risk and take a ride.
Jump right in with both feet tied and you'll be a Newfoundlander.
Hey, hey, come on once more, nothing ventured, nothing sore.
After it's over, out the door,
and you'll be a Newfoundlander. You'll remember that you're a Newfoundlander.
Great fun. Very danceable and very drinkable too.
You got to find the fun. It's fantastic.
Screechin, performed by the Newfoundland folk band Shanigannock. Loosely translated from Gaelic, their name means creature of the night. From the album, Covers from Away. Libby, you studied physics at Imperial College London and went on to specialise in aeronautics and space engineering in 2003. And I wonder what sort of opportunities were open to you once you had graduated and what your ambitions were then?
So when I was 17, I was lucky enough to visit NASA and see Mission Control up close. And that was where I was like, I want to work in Mission Control one day. And as I graduated, that was still very much a dream, but one that I didn't know yet could happen. So I was applying for jobs after university, as you do, and I put on my CV, this is what I want to do, just in case. And it turned out that a company I was applied to, who were looking for graduates to install a new operations centre. And so I was interviewed and they gave me a job. And my first job was working in a mission control centre here in the UK. And that was marvellous, helping put in communications equipment for satellites to communicate with their operators. But it was during that time I saw that the European Space Agency was going to open a mission control centre for the International Space Station, which as I was growing up, I sort of knew was coming, but it was just far away and in the future. But I really became determined then that I would try and get out to Munich, where the control centre was being built, and just kept looking for jobs.
Were there many women working in this area?
No. I would often find myself looking around going, well, I am the only woman here. But it was what I wanted to do and got on with it. That dream, that crazy dream that I'd had of working in mission control, being part of human spaceflight, became a reality and was part of the team that was keeping the astronauts alive, was there when the Columbus module was launched. And I got to live in Munich, and music was a part of what I was doing there as well.
I was going to say, music blossomed as well as science at that point.
It really did. Finding yourself in a foreign country where you don't speak the language initially, I learnt it, but I moved to Germany without more than about three words of German to my name. You seek out new friends. And I was part of a group of people that set up an orchestra for expats, or indeed anyone who wanted to join. We set up a choir as well, and the group is still going strong today, and I had a marvellous time.
At this point, you were still keeping your oboe playing up.
Yes, there's always better oboe players around than me. You only need a couple in an orchestra. That I dusted off my oboe. Did a little bit of conducting as well.
Well, which piece of music have you chosen to demonstrate your prowess on the oboe?
Oh, if only I could play it like this. The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba, to me, was probably one of the pieces that first excited me about the oboe and the sounds it can make.
Wonderfully celebratory arrival of the Queen of Sheba from Handel's oratorio Solomon, we heard Tafel Music, directed by Jean Lamont. Libby Jackson, as you said, you worked at European Mission Control at the International Space Station. Can you tell us what it's like to be in Mission Control?
It's just like in the movies. It really is. It's like walking in to a cathedral, a big religious space, these big high-ceiling rooms with no windows, but with massive screens at the front that have the most beautiful images of the Earth or of astronauts working, floating in space. And a team of people who are all very quiet and very focused on what they're doing, but in their ears are voices from around the world, working together as a team. When I was in Munich, I would be talking to people in Houston and Huntsville in the States, in Scuba near Tokyo in Japan, in Canada. And we had colleagues in Russia as, you know, International Space Station, keeping crew alive, keeping the science experiments running, never knowing what any day is going to bring and dealing with it. And a sense of accomplishment when you've solved the problem. I loved doing jigsaw puzzles as a kid. Still enjoy doing them. And it's something about that sense of, yes, that's the answer to the problem.
What are the specific responsibilities of being flight director, for example, for Columbus, the science laboratory?
You're one of a team of people, and there's a team of flight directors. We have to work around the clock 24/7. And our job is to be ultimately responsible for the day-to-day running of Europe's asset in space, the Columbus module, the people who are working in it, the science experiments that are there around the clock.
Give me one or two examples.
Oh, well, so an experiment that is happening right now is testing a theory that when you shake particles in space, they'll form shapes. And that research could develop materials that you can't make here on Earth, but that are useful to us all on Earth. More recent research is looking at how muscles deteriorate in space. You essentially get old really quickly. A human's skin will deteriorate. The bones and the muscles get weaker. Your eyesight changes. But these are very healthy, middle-aged people. And they come back to Earth and they get better. So we look at how muscles change in space and get weaker in people as we get older. And if we understand that, we can find ways to help people live longer, stronger, better older lives.
You mentioned that you had done a little bit of conducting, and I wonder what qualities flight directors need.
I often compare the two. You are the person standing at the front of an orchestra, bringing together a team of experts. In a flight operations team, you have someone who really knows how the computers work and somebody who really knows how the experiments work. In an orchestra, you've got someone who really knows how to play the violin or the percussion or so on. You're saying, I need to know this from you or that from you. And you can all just settle down for a bit because this person needs to think. And I really enjoy that.
It's like queuing up a solo.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing.
You also need to be fairly calm. And I know your next choice of music is something that actually instills a sense of calm.
Yes. When you are dealing with problems, what you have to do is stay calm. And you stay calm by practicing over and over again. Get into a simulation room where you have a computer pretending to be that spacecraft. And some very clever people program that computer to constantly go wrong. And so we will practice what happens when an experiment springs a water leak, or there is a fire, or a micrometeorite hits the space station and starts depressurizing. And by practicing that over and over again, you learn what you might do, but you also learn how to stay calm, assess the situation, think about what you know and don't know.
And this music personifies for you a degree of calm.
Yeah, it's so tranquil. It just makes me breathe.
Interestingly, music that was originally for a string quartet, but is set here by Sam Barber as a choral work, Our New Stay.
Yeah, and this was a piece that I sung in the chamber choir back when I was a teenager. It's haunting.
Thank you.
It is a profoundly affecting piece, and of course ties in with your Newfoundland story, 9/11. This music became, the orchestral version, a lullaby, a lament for the whole occasion.
Of course, yes, which I had forgotten about, actually. Mm. I find it calming and present. It just echoes through the ether.
Samuel Barber's own choral arrangement of the Adagio movement from his string quartet. Lawrence Equilby conducted the Ascentus Chamber Choir in Agnus Dei. You joined Libby Jackson, the UK Space Agency, in 2014. So what prompted your return to the UK?
Well, I had grown up as a Brit, fascinated by human spaceflight and astronauts and dreaming of working in this, but knowing that it was impossible. Because after Helen Sharman's flight in 1991, when I was 10, the UK government decided that that was not something this country would do. And then slowly the tides turned, and scientists, in fact, really made a case for how important it was to have access to the amazing laboratory that is the International Space Station. And back in 2012, the UK government decided to join the European Space Agency's programme. Prior to that, Tim Peake was selected as our second UK astronaut in 2009, and I worked alongside him over in Mission Control. And so when in 2013 his flight was announced, much sooner than I ever expected, and I think he ever expected, I really wanted to be a part of it. And I was very fortunate again. There was a position available at the Space Agency to manage his education programme, and that was a job I thought sounded absolutely fantastic. I applied for the job, was very fortunate to get it, packed my bags, moved to Swindon, where the UK Space Agency is based, and put together a programme that I'm still incredibly proud of that reached over 2 million children through Tim's flight and showed them how exciting space can be.
Must have been an extraordinary feeling on the day he took off.
I was standing on a balcony in the Science Museum, South Kensington. We had something like 3,500 local school children cheering the roof off. And the most risky parts of any mission are launch, landing, and then spacewalks. Once you're safely on board the space station, you're not without risk at all, but you're in the safest part of the mission, and there are things we can do when things go wrong. And I remember being at the Science Museum for Tim's flight, and people say that the rocket, you do the big countdown, you do the cheer, hurrah, it's on its way, and everybody else relaxes. And someone was tapping me on the shoulder going, great, the launch has happened, can we talk to you now? And I gave them such a terrible look, because until you've got Tim safely to space, until that rocket is finished burning, until everything's gone the way it's gone, you can't relax, because you know that things might happen.
And you had a rather wonderful idea. I think you matched Tim Peak when he was doing a marathon in space by echoing it on Earth.
Yes, I ran the actual marathon very slowly, much more slowly than Tim did, in a very nice air-breathing replica of his spacesuit. And it was fantastic fun to, again, talk about space in a place that people don't expect it. If we can inject space into sport or music and help people see that space is everywhere, space is important, but space is a field that anybody can come and work in, well, that's fantastic.
Well, that's exactly what we're going to do now with the next piece, isn't it?
I hope so, yes. This is one of my favourite tracks. This was an album that really brings space and music together. Public service broadcasting take history and interweave it with music and produce something very special.
This is Apollo Control at 102 hours into the flight of Apollo 11. It's grown quite quiet here in Mission Control. A few moments ago, Flight Director Gene Kranz requested that everyone sit down, get prepared for events that are coming. And he closed with the remark, good luck to all of you. Minutes now until ignition for powered descent. Everything's still looking very good at this point. Okay, all flight controllers, go, no, go for powered descent. Retro, go. Fido, go. Guidance.
go.
Control, go.
Falcon,
go.
Jinsei,
go.
Ecom,
go.
Surgeon,
go.
Capcom, we're go for power descent.
We're off to a good start. Play it cool.
Flight controllers, I'm going around the horn. Okay, retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Falcon.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Falcon.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom, we're go for landing. Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
75 feet, down and half. 1202 alarm. 60 seconds.
We're going that flag.
We're going that alarm.
40 feet, down 2.5.
If it does reoccur, will we go?
30 seconds.
Over.
1201.
1201,
roger. 1201 alarm.
1201 alarm.
Same type, we're go, flight.
Okay, we're go. We've had shutdown.
Listen,
Tranquility
Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Okay, keep the chatter down in this room. T1, stand by. T1. Stay no stay, all flight controllers. Retro.
Stay.
Vital.
Stay.
Guidance.
Stay.
Control.
Stay.
Falcon.
Stay.
GNC.
Stay.
Ecom.
Stay.
Surgeon.
Stay.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guidance.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Falcon.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guidance.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Roll.
Go.
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 Does that conjure up the feeling of activity in Mission Control?
Oh, yes. It's spot on. What you hear there is Gene Kranz, very famous flight director, one of the original ones. And he's going around asking the different positions if they're ready for Apollo 11 to touch down. That call, go, no-go call, is what I would do as a flight director. And to have the most iconic call for the lunar landing sector music in such a fantastic way, I think it's brilliant.
Go, a track from Public Service Broadcasting 2015 album, The Race for Space. So that piece uses very cleverly NASA recordings. And actually your next choice also brings together words and music in a quite original way.
Yeah, this was a piece I discovered at the Proms. Me and my partner, we're both fans of classical music. So he and I really enjoy going and promenading properly. I still think it's the best concerts there are. So we had gone along, I think it was to see some Brahms in the second half.
German Requiem, perhaps.
There you go. Thank you very much. I don't remember the second half because I was blown away because it was such a visual piece as well as an amazing concoction. And one of the reasons I also wanted to include it is because you look back at the music that we hear all the time and it is just full of men in that way that the space industry is too. So that was another reason I really wanted to include Jennifer Walsh, because she's a fantastic modern day composer.
And she had the players not just playing their instruments but doing other things at the same time.
Yeah, there was swirly bits of ribbon. I have this very visual memory of the percussion section having to wrap a giant giraffe in paper and grey tape. But I suspect if you listen to the piece of music, you don't actually always understand what these noises are. And there I was standing in the middle of the Albert Hall, enjoying this amazing piece of music. And all of a sudden my work comes right back around to grab me as well, because she's taken these snippets from the internet, weaving through different experiences of life. And then she starts talking about how a horizon goal is a surface landing, which is a phrase that I use in interviews all the time, because the horizon goal of space agencies in exploration is to get humans to Mars. It's a surface landing on Mars. And so it was a very surreal moment to suddenly have work come crashing into this marvellous piece.
How far into the future is landing on Mars?
Mars has been 30 years in the future since I was born. So when we left the moon in 1972, people were talking about landing on Mars by 2000s. And this horizon goal has been about 30 years away on the horizon. But it will happen in my lifetime.
And this idea that we can solve all our problems simply by going to Mars, that we won't simply export the problems we already have to another planet. You know, we live in a time where we have space billionaires claiming Mars as their birthright, where we have NASA setting out horizon goals for landings within only a few years. And we have to ask ourselves, are we going to allow ourselves to, you know, wreck another planet simply because it's too exciting not to? My horizon goal is a surface landing. My horizon goal is a surface landing. You need really good AI, really decent psychological AI, to be able to send people to Mars. There's a 45-minute delay in communication, otherwise people in crisis can't deal with that. Each journey features increasing challenges, increasing hardships, and increasing sacrifices as humans move away from Earth, as we journey farther than we have ever ventured into the known universe. My horizon goal is a surface landing. My
An excerpt from Jennifer Walsh's The Site of an Investigation from a performance at the BBC Proms in 2022. We heard Walsh herself with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Ilan Volkov. Libby Jackson, what is your reaction to people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, space billionaires?
The SpaceX rockets have brought about a significant change in the space industry. They've brought the cost down, they've brought in reusability, and they are a key part of the space ecosystem that today is keeping the space station flying, SpaceX ferries crew to and from the space station and cargo. You look back at where the airline industry was 50 years ago and so on. You know, it was an early stage industry with a lot of government support, with the rich and famous flying. And today it has evolved into an industry that enables us all to stay in touch and connect around the world and much more. The space industry will evolve. The likes of Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk will play their parts in it. But we have to find a way forward that balances all the different needs, the inevitable march of progress against the need to explore sustainably to protect our planet, And this is one of the challenges today, is working out what the right way to do that is.
Well, it's wonderful to hear your unceasing wonder for your subject, your sheer excitement and exhilaration when you talk about space. Tell me about your final piece.
Yeah. So throughout my life, George Michael has been absolutely one of my favourite artists. I have a very early memory of sitting in the back of my dad's white Toyota Celica listening to a bit of Wham. But seeing George Michael play live with an orchestra was something very special. And I thought I would choose a piece for Chris, my partner. I don't get to do any of this without the support and the love of my family and Chris in particular. So this one's for him.
So this is My Baby Just Cares For Me. Libby Jackson, thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been lots of fun. I've enjoyed it.
Good evening, London. Happy Saturday. See your hands. My baby don't care for shoes. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for cars and races. My baby don't care for. He don't care for heights or places. A little bit of tail is a naughty style. Can deal in Ricky Martin's smile. Something he can't see. My baby don't care. I won't know. Says his prayers for. I said, baby, just cares for me. Boom, 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 boom.
George Michael singing My Baby Just Cares For Me from that live performance from the 2014 album Symphonica. It was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, Libby Jackson of the UK Space Agency. Today's episode was produced by Claire Walker, and next week Michael's guest will be the musician and writer Ben Watt. BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio, BBC Sounds, and on most smart speakers. Just ask for BBC Radio 3. It's 1 o'clock and time for the news, read by me, Jane Royce. The head of the Royal College of Nursing says members in England are prepared to strike until Christmas if they can't reach a deal with the government. Pat Cullen has called for ministers to improve their pay offer of a 5% rise and a one-off bonus, saying it's neither fair nor reasonable. The RCN announced on Friday that its members would walk out from the 30th of April to the 2nd of May. The Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, says more strikes would have a deeply concerning impact on emergency services and cancer care. Motoring groups and campaigners are calling for all smart motorways to be scrapped after the government cancelled 14 new routes in England due to cost and low public confidence. The motorways, where technology is used to regulate traffic, also use the hard shoulder as an extra lane. Ministers say extra safety measures will be put in place for existing smart motorways. Gun battles are raging for a second day in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, as rival wings of the armed forces fight for power. Tanks are rumbling through the streets as fighter jets roar overhead. Health workers say more than 50 civilians have been killed in the clashes between the regular army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. A former Indian politician who'd been convicted of kidnapping has been shot dead live on television, along with his brother. Atiq Ahmed, who was under police escort, was killed while answering questions from journalists. Three men have been detained. Climate ministers from the G7 group of industrialised countries have agreed to speed up the phasing out of fossil fuels. At a meeting in Japan, they set new targets for developing solar and offshore wind energy with the aim of eliminating fossil fuels by 2050. They didn't back a plan put forward by Canada to stop using coal by 2030. And today's, the rest of the weather for the rest of the day, this afternoon will be mostly cloudy with a few spots of light rain in Northern Ireland and the west of Scotland and the northwest of England. A few hazy sunny spells in the east and southeast of England. Temperatures will reach 12 degrees Celsius in Edinburgh, 13 in Belfast and 15 in London and Cardiff. And that's the BBC News.
The best of Radio 3 is at your fingertips in a curated selection on BBC Sounds. Discover great artists such as Mitsuko Uchida, Sheku Kane Mason and Simon Rattle. Or dive deeper between the notes.
All of Mozart's musical training is somehow boiled down in this music.
Shake off the weight of the world with relaxing music mixes and experience the thrill of live performance whenever and wherever you choose. The whole